live from Westchester. It's the Jay and Randy Show, a program that's funnier than Caddyshack 2, more interesting than watching paint dry, and less annoying than a film with subtitles, no matter what Jay thinks. And now, without further ado, here's Jay and Randy.
Alrighty, yes, top of the morning to you. Hope you had a wonderful night and you're ready to do a fun show here in the morning. In the studio today, we actually have a guest first thing in the morning, which is a rare occurrence. Typically, we have guests on the 10 o'clock hour, but our guest today has a life, I guess, and has to has other things to do later in her day. So in the studio, I'd like you to welcome a big, warm Jay and Randy Show welcome to Mrs. Karen Porter. How are you today?
Good. To be here.
Good. You are the leader of the peace movement, I believe. What is your official title? It's
Director
of the Peace Movement, Chester County Peace Movement.
Right.
Okay, cool. All right, wonderful. I see you out there and your other supporters as well on the corner of High and Market, where the Chester County Courthouse is. Typically every Saturday you're there, right?
Right.
Been there for quite some time now. How long have you been doing that?
5 years. That comes to over 260 Saturdays.
Wow.
Rain, dedicated.
Rain, snow, heat of day, we're out there.
Wow. You're very, very devoted to the cause. Were you against the war, I guess, from day one? Or?
I was against the war from the time before it started.
Okay.
The summer of 2002, when I first heard rumors of war, the drumbeats of war, I immediately realized this is a mistake.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
I was on your show, actually, not long after that, with Dave, I believe it was.
Okay.
A few months later. Haven't been back since then, but a lot's changed in the past 5 years. We had no idea at the time that I would be sitting here 5 years later still talking about the same war, but here I am.
Sure. I would have never guessed that. I mean, when I saw the TV coverage of Baghdad being bombed, I must admit, back then, I probably would have called into the show and said, "Hey, man, those two towers were knocked down, and, man, President Bush rules because he's going to take out the people that did it." And Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. As much as I had something to do with 9/11, Iraq had something to do with 9/11.
Now, wait a minute, you keep saying we went in because of 9/11.
Well, that's
a whole different issue.
Well, believe me, I think he...
I mean, I'm not saying the war is justified. You know, I'm saying that we went in for another reason.
It's the war on terror, isn't it?
No.
Oh, Iraq isn't the war on terror. That's a different war.
We went in on the justification that they had weapons of mass destruction.
So Iraq isn't anything to do with the war on terror.
Well, we don't know. I don't know what the I don't know what's
The war on terror. Is Iraq part of the war on terror?
Well, it is now.
Oh, it is now. But it wasn't then. So I was a retard.
I don't know. Then. I don't know what's. Well, that's the justification for going into Iraq. Good
or bad. So President Bush has never said that we're going after the terrorists and they're in Iraq.
No, he said he's going in because the UN said they want to see if there's any... Well, they did do terrorists. Actually, that's not true because they gassed a lot of the Kurds.
So we went there because we were worried about Kurds that got gassed a million years ago.
That we supported when they were gassed, by the way. That was an action that we supported with materiel and every other kind of support. You're both right in what you're saying. Number one, about the 9/11 thing... Bush and Cheney both were doing everything they could to lead the country into believing that the invasion of Iraq was a result of the attack on September 11th. And as of this day, a full 40% of the American public still believe that that's true. Now, when pressed by the media in years afterwards about, now, Mr. President or Mr. Vice President, You have led the country to believe that we invaded Iraq because of September 11th. They will say to you, oh, no, we never said that. Well, they talked all around it. They couched all their speeches in terms of juxtaposing an invasion of Iraq with the September 11th attack. In other words, they used it in every way they could to fool the American people into thinking that we were invading Iraq because of September 11th. Now, they have later, in very little quiet answers to questions, said, no, we never said that. We never did that. But something out there that they did convinced a remaining 40% of the American public that that's why we went in there. Weapons of mass destruction, you're right, that was the pretext that was given the American people, as well as the September 11th attack. The UN resolution at the time focused on weapons of mass destruction. So what you were both saying was correct.
Well, Jay is saying that it had nothing to do with 9/11, and we never went there because of 9/11. Jay was quick to jump down my throat.
Oh, he's right. But what I'm saying is the American public, what the American public feels is that we went there, or at least 40% remaining, because of September 11th. And the weapons of mass destruction were thrown up as more fuel to the fire. The reality is that invading Iraq was planned back in the late 90s by something called the New American Century Project, a group of what we call neoconservatives, neocons, who planned to invade Iraq long before September 11th ever happened.
See, the war here at 105 West Gay Street is every time I bring up that when I was working 65 hours a week installing countertops and the trade towers went down, I worked that day. Got home at like 9 or 10 o'clock that night after installing countertops for like a 15-hour day. Couldn't leave. I'm like, excuse me, boss, it's World War III. No, it's not. Do your freaking job. So I went and I installed countertops all day. And then I get home and and I watched television. I actually cried watching television. However amount of time later it was that I went home after working like another 12-hour day of doing countertops and sat at my kitchen table with the 31-inch TV built into the cabinets, and I drank beer and at that time smoked 9,000 cigarettes and watched the war on TV and went, yeah, right. Look at Bush kicking some ass, taking some names. Yeah, he's showing them towel heads, you know, as like, it's payback time. This is the war on terror. We're going to pay back, and we're going to find out who did this. And that was the war on terror that we watched on TV. It was better at that time than watching The Simpsons or The Family Guy. It was cooler to sit and watch the Baghdad bombings, and that's payback in my world. I'm sorry, I didn't have all 60 hours a week to read every news outlet. I was busy working, and then I would watch TV, and I was told by our president, that's the war on terror. But, Jay, you never heard that. All you heard was that...
Well, that's the justification. We went into Afghanistan. Do you object to going into... Mrs. Porter, do you object to going into Afghanistan?
I didn't at the time, but looking back, I do now, and I have reasons for that. But I did not at the time, because, like your partner here, I was working a full-time job. I was also a single parent. The day that September 11th happened, I was sitting in my office working all day, and then I ran in some fear to pick up my son at his school because we didn't know if the whole country was being attacked that day. I had a early teenage son at that point, and no, I wasn't reading everything either, but I started reading real fast to figure out what was going on.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Do you believe that there are wars that are justified to fight?
I'm on the fence about that. It really, it depends a great deal.
About World War II, which is the most... people consider most justified.
I probably would not have objected. I was born a couple of years after it
ended.
Well,
I'm just saying that. That's when we were attacked.
I have some problems with war in general, and...
everybody does.
Yeah,
Nobody likes war.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
Now, Afghanistan, though, no, I did not object at the time. I do object now, and since you asked the question, I'll tell you why. Because we went into Afghanistan, I think a lot of us, including myself, saw what we thought might be an end to terrible oppression of the Afghanistan people after years of wars with the Soviets all over Afghanistan and then enduring the horrors of the Taliban, I, like many Americans, thought that we could really do some good there. And when the Taliban fell, I felt that was really a good thing, and I got very interested in the plight of the Afghanistan people, read a lot about their culture, etc. In fact, there's a man speaking at Westchester University tonight, Greg Mortensen, about his book, Three Cups of Tea, about founding schools in Afghanistan. I became very interested in that country. However, what we did, though, when we went into Iraq was we totally forsook all our promises to the Afghanistan people to recreate their society, to support Hamid Karzai in building up their country, to fulfill their dreams. So now, looking back, I have a problem with wars on a basis that if they are not waged competently, too, I think they can cause more harm than they set out to achieve. And Afghanistan is a great example of that. We have totally betrayed the Afghanistan people. So looking back now, if I knew then what I know now, I would not have supported that war.
All right, and let's go to little Mikey who's been waiting patiently. Mikey, hey now. All right, he's gone. Not waiting patiently. All right, very good. All right, and we'll go to line two. Hey now, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello now. How are you?
Oh, well, this is Joe C., not Mikey.
Yeah, I know. How you doing, Joe C.?
Oh, all right. I'm doing fine. And yourself?
Wonderful.
Ms. Porter, how are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad. Can I assume that you are not against war to protect this country?
Well, let me say this. In 5 years of being at this anti-war effort,
mm-hmm.
I've moved much closer to pacifism than I ever was before. I'm not totally there yet because, as Pete Seeger sings in a great song, Bring 'em Home, Bring the Troops Home, he makes a point. He says, I'm not a pacifist. If someone attacks this country, I'd be out on the front line. I'm not sure I wouldn't be out on the front line, too. I tend to feel that we need to defend our own. So I hope that answers your question.
Well, it kind of leaves me a little concerned because you're coming at it from the negative. You're not sure that you wouldn't be there. I would feel that most of us as Americans would want to be there if there was a direct attack on our country. In other words, we live here. We enjoy all the things that our governments, whether we agree with everything they do or not. We enjoy all the freedoms that we have here. I, for one, would unequivocally say that if attacked by some entity, I would be there, in the front or somewhere, helping this country survive, because that's our first goal, is to survive no matter what. Are you indicating that if attacked by another country, that you would have to think very hard about whether you would want to defend your country or not?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I tend to defend, and I have defended in certain situations. I'm quite sure I would not hesitate.
Okay. All
if that
right.
answers
well,
your question. Maybe I said it in a roundabout way, because I struggle philosophically with that. You see, I was raised a Christian, and I was raised very much on the turn the other cheek
mm-hmm.
teachings of Christ, and I have a conflict with that. I can't quite turn the other cheek in every situation, and I'll readily admit that.
Okay. I'm not sure whether the Lord would want us to just lay down and let the tanks go over us.
He says what he says.
I don't think turning the other cheek in an actual war is going to make a difference. It just means that they're going to be stepping over your body to get to the next guy that turns the other cheek.
Yeah, I think she made it clear that if we're attacked, we should fight back.
Right.
And I probably, just as Pete Seeger saying, he said I'd be on the front line. I think that's my own personality, too. That's why I quoted what he said.
Okay. Not to be short with you, I'm not interested in quotes of other people. I'm interested in what you're thinking and what you're believing, because I see you out there every Saturday, and I respect your right to do that. It's a little messy sometimes, but I do respect your right to be out there. I guess my thoughts are At what point did you decide, because I didn't hear all the beginning of this, at what point did you decide to go out there? Right after 9/11, right after somebody said no, they really didn't have nuclear weapons. Afghanistan, we've got to take some people out of there and go now to Iraq. At what point did? What was a seminal incident for you?
Well, it was September 2002 when I realized that we were planning an attack on a country that had nothing to do with September 11th. There was a real disconnect. Like, wait a minute, we're suffering from an attack by a group of people called Al-Qaeda with a primarily Saudi group of people on some airplanes, and we're attacking Iraq? That made no sense to me whatsoever.
Okay, you had been listening to what the president, you know, the precursor, all the conversations going up to that point, and you just disagreed with him entirely, or wasn't comfortable with the way he was saying things, or?
I wasn't comfortable with attacking a country that had not attacked us. You were just talking about self-defense. This had nothing to do with self-defense.
Okay, so item that the Vice President Cheney had pronounced, which was a preemptive strike, was something that really raised the hairs on the back of your neck?
Yeah, I did not believe in a preemptive strike.
Okay, yeah, it kind of changed.
You know, it's sort of like, I'm a lawyer, let me explain something. You don't arrest someone out on the street because you think that person might turn around and hit you in the face. There are elements within the law of things like assault and battery, for example. We do not do preemptive strikes on individuals, nor have we historically done preemptive strikes on other countries. If we did that, we'd be fighting a lot of countries in this world.
You know what? That's exactly right. I agree with you there. It's almost as if to say, hey, the psychic says this person's going to do such and such.
Right.
Let's get them first.
Right.
No, there's just something un-American about that. You're exactly right. That is a very, very difficult concept to swallow. There's no doubt about it. And if indeed that's the way that's where we're heading, that's people really would have to sit down and think this out, because this is not one of those things you can just gloss by on the evening news. This is entirely different. This is not what this country was formed for.
Let me give you another example, too. A lot of people will, of course, they'll throw up, well, Saddam Hussein, the evil dictator. Absolutely. Evil dictator.
Hey, there's lots of them out there.
Well,
Why do we choose him? Exactly.
And you know what? I often respond when I hear that, and people give me a blank stare when I say that. I'll say, what about Charles Taylor? One of my great examples. He was over hacking people's arms off in Africa. And most people here don't even know who Charles Taylor was. Well, the main thing was Charles Taylor didn't have control over a vast repository of oil.
And that's what it gets back to. Let the record show I'm giving you the same blank stare when you said Charles Taylor.
Yeah, most people don't know who he is. He was every bit as evil a dictator. He was banished from his country.
That's Liberia, right?
I'm sorry?
Liberia.
Yeah, Liberia, but he was also hacking off arms in neighboring Sierra Leone, too. His viciousness went into more than one country. Now, he's still alive and kicking, and he would love to come back in power in Africa, and I'm not sure we're paying any attention, and right now nobody knows who he is in this country today.
But the bottom line is what you mentioned, the oil. Wars are fought because of needs and jealousies. You have something I want. You won't share it. You won't agree to an exchange of something. We are suffering. We are suffering now to the point where we need it, and now we've decided we're going to get it.
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, Japan in World War II was that way because we had created a boycott against them. Forget all the reasons behind that, but it was almost like we forced them into attacking us in some way. Not that, you know, we weren't justified or whatever. I'm just saying there are consequences to what happens. It's a gosh darn shame that we went into Iraq. What a damn mess that it is. It's just like Colin Powell said, you know, you break it, you buy it. I would have to agree that we are not prosecuting this right at all. I would also have to agree that somebody had a hair up their butt to do this in the first place, probably because daddy didn't finish it, so I'm going to finish it. type of thing. But it, in the same sense, you have to be able to not only separate the, what I'm going to say, but also rejoice in it. The way that our troops are following through with the task that the government gave them. Okay? Nothing, in other words, the troops, you cannot cast this sin, if you want to call it that, onto the troops. It's the government, pure and simple. In this country, it's the government that decides when we go to war, how much of our resources we put in it, and when we decide that we're declaring victory and pulling out. So the troops themselves deserve all of our support, regardless of whether we feel that a war is wrong, inconsequential, or what have you. So how do you, as a leader or a member of a peace movement, handle that situation?
Well, we handle it by, I guess the best thing I can say is we support the troops by trying to bring them home. We supported the troops in the first place by trying not to send them over there. Mm-hmm. We're getting close to 4,000 deaths. That number's coming up pretty soon. We have, with our vigils, we have had a special vigil now at 1,000, at 2,000, at 3,000, and we're coming on soon. We just manufactured a bunch of black armbands because we know we're going to be out there with 4,000.
Yeah.
Who knows? Another year, it might be another 5,000.
Right.
If this country had listened to us 5 years ago, we wouldn't be at that number. The other thing is, you're absolutely right what you said about the troops. They are doing their job, and they are doing it for whatever reason they believe that they were told they're doing it for. It's almost irrelevant. They're doing mm-hmm. their job. And we can't do anything less than support them. However, let me say this. The big tragedy is going to come years from now. We're seeing now the lack of care that we're giving. Troops who in previous wars would have died on the battlefield are coming back horribly maimed, horribly injured. They're coming back to an economic situation that does not favor them. We are not doing what we need to be doing for them. And I'm seeing down the road that our group will probably, unlike groups in the past, probably focus more on that very issue. I've been sending out, for example, in the past week, a lot of emails, stories from people in our group. We have a very large group of about 1,000 people in Chester County, and I put out an email a couple of weeks ago about the Vietnam experience and what the troops have endured after they came back from Vietnam. And I'm getting in now lots of stories that I'm sending out about, yes, my partner has endured this as a Vietnam veteran, or my fiance died in Vietnam and here's what happened to us later. We're going to see those stories multiplied in the coming years, and we're also going to see an American public that I fear is going to forget about what they gave, and they are going to get worse treatment than we even have given Vietnam troops. The money's not going to be there. They're already seeing unemployment, homelessness, lack of medical treatment. And part of our job, I think, will be to continue to tell the story that this is what happens with war, and these are the people now suffering in our country as a result of going over and bravely sacrificing, putting it all on the line for this country, and look how we're treating them.
Okay.
All right, thank you. 1520 AM, WCHE, Westchester, where the static is. We're in studio here with Karen Porter, director of the Peace Chester County Peace Movement, and we'll go to Mike, who has a question for you. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, now. Good morning, Karen. Is that right?
Good morning, yes.
Okay. Hey, you know, now I feel we should never went into Iraq. Because I you know, everybody knows I'm crazy nutball, but I think who's that guy, Saddam, Randy?
Yes.
He had everything under control. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I think we'd be better off with it if we never stepped foot in the place.
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
I agree 100%. It was just a big big stink bomb by George Bush, and he threw a bunch of smoke in your face and. They gave him the excuse to go after the guy who was after his dad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, just so you know, Karen.
Yes.
I was talking to a friend of mine's mother, who the guy's a medic over there, and his on his second tour of duty, he didn't want to go back. He says it's the worst thing he's ever been to in his life, ever experienced.
Mm.
Didn't want to go back.
And I'll doubt it.
Now, my father was telling me the AWOL, or is it AWOL?
Yeah.
That's
desertion rate.
Yeah, that's the highest it's ever been.
Really?
Wow. Ever.
I didn't know that. Wow.
It is. Yeah, the statistics just came out within the past 48 hours that it's gone up exponentially just in the past year. I think it's like 5,000 a year, something like that. It's a big number of people.
What is that, away without leave? What is it?
Absent without leave, but okay. It's also called desertion, which theoretically is punishable by death in this country. It's not being prosecuted. Some are going to Canada. Some are just fading into the population.
Yeah.
But it's a huge number.
Nobody wants to be there, Randy.
Well, see, I would think if you volunteered, which they all did, volunteered for this army, you shouldn't be going AWOL. In Vietnam, I would have been the first one jumping across that border to Canada because it was a draft. If I was drafted, I would have rolled. I wouldn't have served. But, you know, if I voluntarily joined the army, should go.
Now, you see what's happening, though. Iraq is becoming Vietnam.
Well, sure, with the exception of everyone there volunteered.
Could I interject on the volunteer idea? See, the problem with that, though, I understand what you mean by, yes, they volunteered, but what they didn't volunteer for was inhumane deployments. Okay, going back for, I forget the term, there's a ratio, Senator Webb was using it on a hearing the other day. He, as a military man, is pleading desperately to get people into a different ratio. What they're doing, I think, is deploying them for 15 months on, only 12 months home, then send them back for another 15 months, I think it is. And a lot of the desertions are being caused not for lack of wanting to be there with their buddies, protect their country, protect their buddies, and all of that. It's not that at all. It's the fact that they've been into an inhumane situation where they're being asked to do inhuman things, and they just, their families are being destroyed. And then they come back home with no hope of good medical care, no hope of a job, no hope, period, and they're beginning to see through this. One thing people often accuse the anti-war movement of is demoralizing the troops. Well, the demoralizing of the troops is taking place in Washington with policies that are demoralizing the troops, not to mention sending them over to death and destruction. But a big reason for the desertion rate is the fact that, yes, a lot of people volunteered, but they didn't volunteer for interminable service with very little time at home with their families. What they volunteered for was a rational military scheme, a rational job situation, and they're not getting that. They're being betrayed by their government.
Hey, Karen.
Yes.
Do you think it would be one of the best things in the world if they impeached George Bush out of office right now?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Mike. Take care. And we'll go to a different Joe. Good morning, Joe Norley. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
No, you're not Joe Norley.
Listen. This is what I wanted to say here to you. You're talking about, you know, people are being sent into an inhumane environment. I mean, that's what war is all about. It's not humane to shoot people. I mean, but that's how you win wars. That's how we've done it in the past. All these troops that are deserting, I mean, you're taking an advance. The government, you know, you go into the military, nobody forces you in. You get education, you get grants, you know, and you get a retirement. And what you're saying that these people are deserting and they got every reason to, that makes no sense.
No, I don't think maybe you didn't hear what I said. Yeah, war is inhumane. That's not what I was talking about. I was talking about the fact that they are being asked to do what human beings are not prepared to do with this crazy deployment situation. They're in a catch-22 situation where they're being sent over there for long hitches that they were never told about, and then not coming home long enough to even regroup. And
what I'm saying is our government gave them an advance. They got education. They knew when they signed up for the military they could be called. That's what it's all about.
Sure, but they didn't know that the terms of deployment were going to be totally unfair to them. Okay, this is an unprecedented situation where we are asking these men and women to do much more than what they signed up to do. They signed up to rational downtimes as well, to be able to come home and be with their families for enough time to get their families together, get their own health together, and we're not giving them the kinds of breaks that they need, and we're sending them back repeatedly. We're exhausting them. This is not what we have asked them to do in the past, and many, many people in the Congress right now, including Senator Webb, whom I just mentioned, a retired Army or military officer, has been begging to try to treat our troops more humanely, and he's getting turned down every time he begs for this. This is a man who's a military man who's trying to tell the administration and tell you, the public, that we are not treating our volunteer military in a humane manner, not talking about the battlefield, talking about how we treat them otherwise. We are using them, spitting them out, and not treating them well. Yeah, all those benefits are great if you're not a broken human being and you can take advantage of those benefits. If you survive what's become a very horrendous experience, and it's unprecedented. In the past, we treated our military humanely. We're not doing that now.
Well, you said this is quickly turning into a Vietnam.
No, someone else said that, I think.
All right, well, you know, I mean, the point is, you know, always, I bet you could ask people that were in World War II, how humane was it? And I bet it wasn't humane. We've got better care now. We've got better food now for these people that are out in the field. I mean, they're getting better treatment. And you're saying downtime. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're not in battle 24/7, are they? I mean, are you hearing that on the news? I'm not.
No, I'm talking about the number of months that they're over there deployed on the battlefield versus the number of months that they come home to spend with their
families. The point you are missing is they signed up for this.
No, they did not sign up.
Went into a war. Yes, they did.
They did not sign up.
They wouldn't be there if they didn't sign up, you idiot.
Thank you.
Okay, terrific.
I think what he's probably trying to say is when you sign up with the Army or whatever service, you're signing up to do whatever they ask you to do, probably is what he's trying to say. And the people in World War II, they were on the front lines from June of 44 to May of for a whole year, they were, and longer if they had to. In fact, longer. They were there from November of 42 to May of 45.
One difference that they did, I think they at least thought that there was an end in sight. My father fought in that war, and I don't think that they really felt that it was going to go on forever and ever. This war appears to be perpetual. It's gone on for 5 years now, much longer than World War II, and these people are tired.
And World War II, I mean, we were bombed by, I'm going to say, the Japs. I know it's not politically correct now, but at that time, that's what it was. And there were guys lying, saying that they were 18 or 17 when they were 15. They wanted to. They couldn't wait to go there. You didn't need a draft. You would have had millions of guys that wanted to go there. This is like another Vietnam in the sense that...
Yeah, you're right. World War II was I hate to use the word popular because it's a bad word to use with war. But it was, everybody felt it was justified and they had to do a job.
Yeah, and I have to interject here, too. I've sat on a lot of panels with where you have the anti-war side versus the pro-war side. And inevitably, the discussion sort of, in my mind, disintegrates into a discussion of World War II. Talking about World War II, talking with the current war, is like apples and oranges. They're just not comparable. I often hear people bring that up when they can't think of any other good reason to be in Iraq. It's like, well, let's talk about World War II. Well, fine. I wasn't alive in World War II. It was a different situation. You had a mad, crazy man who was trying to take over the world. And it was a totally different situation. I get a little bit impatient sometimes when all of a sudden the conversation gets back to World War II. We're not in World War II now. We're in Iraq.
Well, let me ask you a question. If you find a government who may not attack us directly, but is supporting terrorists who are attacking us, how do you deal with a country like that?
Well, it's difficult because, you know, this goes back to the original questions about, you know, would you support defending the country or any war? What's a just war and what's all of that? If I may use the word, you got to be damn sure what you're doing before you get engaged in something like that. And right now, this government's credibility on why we're fighting wars or doing this or that is damn low. Because you tell me that, I want to see some clear proof. I want to know facts and figures. I want to be convinced of that before I think we're justified in doing anything. And so far, the track record is not good on telling the American people the truth about anything.
But the money has to be coming somewhere for 9/11 or
oh, we put out plenty of money that supported terrorists. We were financing indirectly Osama bin Laden at a certain point.
That's when we were fighting. They were fighting the Russians.
Exactly. So, and we were supporting Saddam Hussein.
Well,
if it were against us, we would probably call it terrorism. Very complicated.
Well, I mean, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan,
yeah,
they were there to occupy.
Yeah, just as we are.
Well, no, we're not there permanently to occupy a country.
Yeah, I would have to laugh about that.
That's the funniest thing you've said all morning, Jack.
It's very funny.
Yeah, what are we doing in Korea now, 50 years
later?
We
don't occupy that country.
We don't have bases?
38,000.
We don't have bases in a country. We have bases in Japan. We have bases in Europe.
That's not
occupation. We don't occupy Germany.
We don't occupy England. We don't have any troops in Korea, Jack.
That doesn't occupy a country.
That doesn't occupy.
You're talking silly.
We have 38,000 troops.
That doesn't mean you occupy a country. They run their own country.
We're just hanging out. They're just visiting.
If Korea told us to get out tomorrow,
okay,
we would be getting tomorrow.
Many South Koreans have said just that.
Is the government doing
it? I'm not sure if it's the majority at this point, but there have been strong debates. Would we leave if we were told to? I don't think so.
38,000 people have been living there, being paid to live there by our government, and that's not occupation.
No, it's not an occupation.
You're the funniest
an
guy
occupation?
Ever.
An occupation? You don't know what you're talking about.
I've heard Chris Rock. I've heard Sam Kinison. You're the funniest I've ever heard. You're the best.
Then you don't know what you're talking about.
No, I know comedy.
When you occupy a country, you actually run the policy of the country.
I'll interject, since we're talking about Iraq, the fact that we have been building the biggest embassy in the history of the world in Iraq. We have built, I think the number is still at 16 military bases in Iraq. We have no intention of ever leaving Iraq.
Okay, Jay, you got something to say about that?
Yeah. I think eventually we'll leave.
I think we're going to leave Korea 50 years later with 38,000 people living there that we pay to live there. They're full-time employees that we pay to live there.
Yeah, because there's a threat from North Korea.
So we're not occupying.
That's not occupying the country.
No. We're just hanging out.
We occupied Germany from 45 to 55, and then we gave it back to the Germans.
And how many guys are stationed in Germany now?
I don't know. It's a lot less now.
Oh, okay, good. That's
probably
good.
Under, you know, 40 or 50,000.
That's a wonderful
But we don't run German policy.
Okay. All right. Very good, Mr. German policy.
And believe me, when we had bases in France, and when de Gaulle came in office in 67, he threw all the Americans out. The Americans had to go.
All right, good.
We didn't run French policy, but we were in there with bases until 67.
Okay.
And then French said, get out, and we got out.
Good. Hey, Mikey.
Hey. Hey, I wanted to clarify that thing on the Vietnam thing that I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
The reason I said it's getting more like Vietnam, the difference between World War II, and see, I hear this all the time because you know my father, Randy.
Yes.
We went into World War II with a plan. You understand that?
Yes.
And we took care of business. And okay. Now it's done. Then it was done. Over. Vietnam, they went in as a police force.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned into a big babysitting campaign. That's what's going on over in Iraq. They don't have a plan. I mean, look at, we already went through a Secretary of Defense because he had no clue what he was doing.
Okay.
You know? So that's why I'm just saying, you know, I really wouldn't have a problem with this war if they would just have a plan and you know, stay with the plan and get it done, and then it'd be over with. Because here's what's going to happen, Randy. We're going to be stuck over there in Iraq. And you know, George Bush, or, you know, that douchebag, he's going to be in Iran before you know it.
I don't doubt it.
You know? And now we're going to be stuck in two of those ungodly places.
Three? Afghanistan.
Yeah, I know, but like at least Afghanistan, we went in and got rid of the Taliban somewhat.
Okay.
They're coming right back.
Yeah, I know. It's because I mean, can't they find, where's Storm and Norman Schwarzkopf? Can't we put him back in control, Randy?
I don't know.
Can't we make him president for a while, for over there? I mean, because that guy knew what he was doing. He went in, he took care of business, and it was done.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what, and the more we sit there and play around over there in those countries, the more guys are going to die. If you went in with a plan and took care of business, granted, okay, there's going to be some deaths, but sure, that's war. But at least it would get done, and we'd get out of there.
Right.
I think it's all Rumsfeld's problem.
And Karen, did you know Jay Scher captured Germans when he was in the Army?
He didn't tell me that.
Yeah, he did.
In 1970.
Yeah, 1970.
Yeah, I would not be surprised.
One of them took his paper clips.
And Jay is actually smoking a bong in the other room with it, that you don't know about. Okay,
all right, thank
goodbye.
You, goodbye. All right, very good.
Well, something he gets back to that desertion rate, too. I think in addition to the what I call inhumane deployment situation, our troops are not stupid. They represent the American public in general, which as of the last figure is 68% against this war. They may not be able to talk about it publicly, but some polls have shown that they're right with the American people, whether they're doing their job and can talk about that or not. That being said, they're no fools. They can see that there's no end to this, that there is no game plan. I think that demoralizes the troops as much as anything and leads to these big desertion rates.
All right, let's go to Skip. Good morning, Skip. You're on the air, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
What a great show, and I first want to apologize for whoever that was yelling at the guest there. I didn't care for that.
My skin's gotten thick. I can take it. Thank
well,
you.
Well, I know. But it's one of the things that always gets to me when this discussion comes about is that it ends up a personal attack on each other rather than looking at the facts.
Yeah.
And I think you've put out some really good facts. I was a Vietnam protester by joining the National Guard.
Good for you.
And I was ridiculed for that for many, many years, that it wasn't really serving the country to be in the National Guard. Well, now the people in the National Guard have gotten the worst deal of all.
Absolutely.
Because they signed up under the pretense that they were going to defend the country here, number one, and the mission changed after they were enrolled into the National Guard to be the first strike force, which we were never before. And now the deployment's a backdoor draft in that once you're there, you can't get out. It just goes on and on and on. And it's not fair to the employers of those people either. The country here, the people that are back here trying to support those troops. How do you hold a guy's job if he's a plumber for 5 years?
Yeah, I would never expect them to.
I mean it's not right.
Yeah,
how do you hold a guy's marriage together?
How does his family
children?
Hold together?
Right.
One of my good friends is in Iraq right now, and he's just come back, and he's going to Fort Drum. Well, now his wife had to leave Georgia, go to Fort Drum. The housing there is horrible. I was stationed at Fort Drum for a while when I was in the National Guard, and it's an old post. It's now a mountain. The mountain troops are trained there, and here she is. She has to pick everything and move from Georgia up to Watertown, New York, where it's located. The housing's horrible, and it's not fair the way they treat our troops. You're so right, and I think that the concept of supporting troops and being against the war is something that a lot of people can't get a hold of.
No, they have difficulty with that. I just want to interject something that people don't think about too often. I was last night at a wonderful gathering called Sharing the Harvest that Senator Dinniman sponsors in Chester County. This is the second one that he sponsored, where people from faith groups all over the county who are doing good works, whether it's in housing or food or education or whatever, they get together. It's a kind of a fair. It was held up in Phoenixville at Valley Forge Christian College. And a lot of the speeches and everything focused on the point that we here at the county level now have to open our purses more and do more volunteer work because, sorry, folks, whether you agree or disagree with this war, the federal government is breaking the bank in Iraq. And that's filtering down here to the local level. So when we talk about supporting the troops, that also means that some of the people out there who are hungry, who don't have jobs, who can't afford housing, who can't get health care, who are uninsured, blah, 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 the list goes on and on, are victims of our spending getting near, I think it's quite close to $1 trillion just so far in Iraq. It's here at the local level, and it's affecting the general population, many of whom are veterans and veterans' families. That's enough. I just had to interject that. There's a lot of bad effect on veterans and their families, but also on everyone in general.
Well, the effect on our economy by the financing of this war is unbelievable.
That's exactly.
I mean, if you look at the value of the dollar, and you can get into that whole thing. I want to get off and let other people get on, but the other thing I wanted to mention is the last war that was really declared by Congress was World War II.
Right.
And we haven't had a declared war, like a war, World War II. The Congress voted. The Congress said, yes, we're going to go to war. Korea was not won. Vietnam was not won. All the attacks on, like, when they rescued people, quote, unquote, out of different islands. And then now this mess. They're not declared wars. They're police actions, like Mikey was saying. And that's a whole different bailiwick than a declared war like World War II.
It is.
And that's all I wanted to end on. But thanks for the show, and I'll listen to see what other people say.
Thank you so much, Skip.
Take care.
All right, take care. There he goes. All righty. 610-692-3131. 610-692-3131. Get you right on the air like you just don't care. Our guest today is Karen Porter. She's in studio joining us here. And we're talking about the war. And you've been out there for quite some time now. Hanging out on the corner in front of the courthouse. I've seen you out there. You have lots of people out there with you. And now, most recently, I understand, like, some bikers or something took over that corner. Now you guys are on the corner with the bank. So what's the latest with that? I see pictures of guys. They look like the dudes from, what's that show where they take the... they make those custom motorcycles. It looks like those guys. You ever see those dudes?
I haven't seen the show. But
no, what's that show called? Jesse? No, not Jesse James. That other dude. The guy with his two sons that make the custom choppers.
Choppers?
It looks like them guys.
Choppers?
Is that what it's called? Choppers?
I don't know.
Oh. Are you guessing over there?
Yes, I'm guessing.
It looks like those two dudes. But I always see inside the papers, I see on websites, these close-ups of these dudes with like gray mustaches and goatees and beards. And they're wearing, like, leather jackets and denim jackets. And Jay told me.
What?
What were you telling me yesterday? That one guy has a sign where he, like, supports Israel or something.
The one time I passed Saturday.
It was like a biker with an Israel thing.
There was one guy who was a biker. They had some rough-looking people holding Israeli flags, which I didn't understand.
Well, I could explain it to you if you want to know. But, well, this started about 3 months ago, and it's what we call, for lack of a better term, a counter-protester group. They have been there. It's been almost 3 months. It originally started out with just a handful of people, a disgruntled veteran who lives here in Westchester who said he got sick of seeing us out there. And the goal has been voiced from the beginning that they want us to get off the corner. And they say they support the troops, they say they support the war, but all their signs, all their talk, all everything is really that they want to get rid of us. And the local person called in a national group called the Gathering of Eagles and another national group called the Patriot Guard Riders. Those are the motorcycle people you see. And their national director has been there. This is part of, we think, a national effort because we're getting reports in from other parts of the country where these groups are doing the same things, which is essentially harassment, intimidation, trying to provoke something. There's been a lot of nudging, a lot of cursing, a lot of in-your-face kind of stuff. And we moved across the street, although some of our people still stay on the side of the courthouse, primarily to prevent violence, because that's what we were threatened with. And we made a calculated decision. As long as we were over there, they were bringing in all these people. They would come up and jump in front of us. They would come up, do things like literally yell in your face. They would chase me around and physically
around in the group
and everything. It was pretty obnoxious. So after a couple of Saturdays of that, we brought in the police. We make sure we have police presence there every Saturday. We called the ACLU. They sent in lawyer monitors to watch. We needed someone to watch what was going on, so that if anything happened, we would have recorded evidence about what was going on, about this intentional harassment. And then we made a decision that to keep the peace and to have a peaceful vigil, we moved over to the catty corner, just so physically we would not have them amongst us constantly trying to provoke something, which is exactly what they were doing.
When I did pass there, it was a little frightening.
It was very frightening, and we were shocked.
Yeah, I was shocked too. You know, I was just driving through and I heard that screaming and yelling. I was a little frightening, yeah.
They were doing things. They used the motorcycles, for example. I have no objection. In fact, I started getting emails from all over the country from motorcycle gangs for peace who said, "We wish we could be there." One guy out in California said, "I want you to know that, you know, motorcycle riders aren't necessarily anything like this group. I wish we could be there to support you." What they started doing, which part of the reason we moved across the street, and they claim this as a victory, by the way. It isn't a victory. It's a decision on our part to preserve the peace on that corner. Mm-hmm. And I had people to protect. We've got old people out there. We've got babies. We've got children. I could not keep them amongst this group with any sense of conscience on my part and feeling of responsibility for their safety. They were doing things like we do a moment of silence at the end of each of our vigils when the clock strikes 12. They would start revving up the motorcycle engines to drown us out. Mm. If we tried to make announcements, they would come over and start singing at the top of their lungs, but the motorcycle engines were what they were using the most. It was out-and-out intimidation. And they accused me of bigotry because I called them a bunch of thugs. Well, my position was stop acting like a bunch of thugs, and I won't call you a bunch of thugs. But you stop acting like it. That's what you're trying to put across to people, is that you are a bunch of thugs who will stop at nothing.
Thugs is not like a bigoted word.
Well, they've used that to say I'm an evil B-I-T-C-H. I hear that can be said in the mainstream media with regard to Hillary Clinton, for example. But they call me the evil bitch, you know, who deserves everything and who's biased against motorcycle people. Well, I'm sorry. You know, as I say to people, they didn't come in here wearing L.L. Bean and J. Crew outfits and Madras shorts. They came in dressed and acting like they wanted to provoke something. I call them what they made themselves appear to be, and they've used that. I'm all over the internet, though, as the evil bitch from Westchester.
Wow.
Wee! Yeah. I've never been so flattered. I'm a pretty mild-mannered person.
The whole time I thought that was Josie.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding, of course.
He's on the phone.
I know. Let's go to Josie quickly before the break. Good morning, Josie. Yes?
Yes, sir. Ms. Porter, I also want to apologize for that other Joe's comment. Obviously, that comes from frustration, not being able to get his point across.
Yeah.
As even you can tell the frustration in Mikey, who is a very gentle person as well.
Yes.
You've really placed yourself in the middle of a maelstrom there, because it's a very, very difficult position to be in. When do we fight? When don't we fight? When do we, at what point do we decide the government is honest with us or isn't? And what are our options at that point? So it's pretty much the egg's broken, you know, Humpty Dumpty's fallen from the wall. We have to move on. So what, I guess, trying to get down to brass tacks, forget all the hyperbole, forget about, oh, it's the worst war, the highest desertion, whatever. You know, these fellows signed up for defending our country, whatever the government decides is defending our country. People in Europe were there for 3+ years. I'm sure very many of them thought that it would never end, and others thought they would be pulled out next week. Forget about all of that. Just really concentrate on these the most important things at this point, which is, if this war is illegal, if this war is not good for our country, how do we get our fellows out of there without making that country, making Iraq worse?
You can't, but every day it gets worse. So cut your losses today. Cut the line and run. We're done. You're never going to win it. It's an unwinnable war.
I didn't say win it. I just said make it not
Wrap
worse.
Wrap it up. It's Miller time. Come home today. No more deaths for American soldiers.
That's unrealistic.
I hate to answer for you, but now let's hear Ms. Porter's answer.
I have to say I totally agree. And let me qualify this, that people in the anti-war / peace movement, they're two co-equal terms, they're all over the board on this, because there are a lot of people who are really worried about the fact, well, we leave a catastrophe, all the people are going to die, et cetera. But I have to agree with the, we've got to leave and cut our losses. You see, this is where, and I could almost cry as I sit here and talk about this, 5 years ago, those of us who realized, because we took the time to figure out what was going on, I could cry because we tried to yell to the rooftops that you're opening Pandora's box. The genie's coming out of the bottle. The Middle Eastern situation is so nuclear, in a sense, to maybe use the wrong adjective, but it's...
The neocons didn't care.
They didn't care.
They lied to us. They told us it was going to be
exactly.
A clean sweep. And, you know, they may not have said it, but all of us semi-intelligent people said, oh, low-priced oil, okay, yeah, well, I'm with that.
Well, the thing is, we have created the situation that all of us were yelling at the rooftops then,
mm-hmm.
We said we would create. There is no good way out of this, and we've known this for 5 years now, and they knew it too. In fact, there's a lot of speculation, I think it's more than speculation, that this was the plan, to create total chaos in the Middle East for an eventual taking over. Then this gets tied in. You know, we haven't gone there yet. This gets tied in with the Israeli flags and the Christian right and all that kind of stuff. There's
yeah,
a lot more.
That.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. A lot of yeah. people don't understand that,
yeah.
but you do, obviously.
It could very
yeah.
easily just snowball. You're absolutely right.
Right. By design.
Mm-hmm.
By design. So
yeah.
those of us who are arguing against her say, wait a minute, cut the losses, get home, let the Middle Easterners figure out, mm-hmm. do their own self-determination, form democracies, do whatever they're going to do, but get the hell out and stop killing our troops in Iraq.
All right, now can I inject one other item to this?
Can you do it quickly?
Muslims.
What about
right?
them? What about them?
That they hate Christians.
Yeah, you're never going to beat them up to make them like you, so what's your point?
My point is, how can we pull back from a situation where they are continuing to attack us in different ways, terrorism and so forth? We're almost talking about the Crusades again.
Which we are not helping to defuse in any way.
Yes,
yeah.
I understand that. And that's what I'm saying. How can you back? Yeah, I don't think you can back away gracefully from it. I mean, we're talking about something that has been going on in the minds of certain groups of people since the late 1400s.
We have played right into Osama bin Laden's hands. George Bush gave him a big gift a few
mm-hmm.
5 years ago, and that's the reality.
He wanted to be the new Saladin.
Yeah, and can we qualify this right now with one thing? I know a lot of Muslims here in this country who do not feel anti-Christian and who are not our enemy. Unfortunately, I'm starting to see more and more scapegoating over this whole thing, so that some of this will, unfortunately...
Which is a damn shame.
It's a damn shame. It really is. It's a damn shame because we're creating this crusade situation that didn't have to be. I think the best we can do right now is try to all of a sudden do an about-face and try to do the right thing and live by example, which we have not been doing for 5 years.
All right. Just say
okay.
I got a spot.
All right. Well, listen, thanks very
Thank
much
you.
For letting me get on the second time. Ms. Porter, I appreciate it. I respect you very much, and I agree with some of what you said. And I wish you a good health.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Is there anybody on the horizon you think that would help get us out of Vietnam? Any political? And we all want to be out of, I'm sorry, Vietnam. Iraq.
That's a Jay's Freudian slip.
Freudian slip. Iraq. And is there anybody you think that'll
good question,
that'll get
Jay.
Us out? Everybody wants to be out of Iraq. I do, too.
No. Out of all the presidential candidates, two want to get out of it. The rest of them all want to hang out and live
there. Let me ask her if she supports anybody that'll finger it, that'll get us out of Iraq sooner
or
immediately.
I'm going to write down two names of people. I'm not going to show her.
I mean, she don't have to answer if she's not supporting
anybody. She will, because this is a game. And I'm not spelling it right.
If you're writing percentage.
Yes. How do you know?
Because you didn't spell it right.
Yeah, I know.
Someone asked me that question last night. Whom are you supporting? You know, well, and I didn't name Kucinich right off, although he certainly would be the person who would do the job and is right. He's a very intelligent man who knows what he's talking about, and he would get us out of there right away. But he's not going to win. So, that being so, I doubt that either he or Joe Biden or...
Joe Biden doesn't want to get out of there.
Bill Richardson.
He doesn't want to get out of there.
Well, I'm talking about who will not be the candidates, okay? I don't think they will be the nominees for president. First of all, it's certainly not going to be Rudy Giuliani or Mitt Romney or any of that crew, okay? But probably the people who I would see who would really want to get us out faster than anyone else would probably be Obama or Edwards. I also think, despite her saber rattling and her less anti-war stance, Hillary Clinton would probably also do that too, because you have to look at those three as having very strong domestic concerns. And we're not going to do anything in this country for this country until we get out of Iraq. And for their own domestic agendas, as well as whatever they may feel about the war, and I think Obama, of those three, is the most anti-war of the three, and probably the most internationalist in his viewpoints. I believe that any one of the three would get us out as quickly as possible, and I would probably rate them in line as Obama, Edwards, and Clinton from what I hear them talk about. I was very disappointed that Hillary Clinton signed on to this Kyle Lieberman amendment, which declared a big part of the Iran Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist group. I think that was a lot of saber rattling toward the possible starting of another war, and that she was again, as she had done previously, giving Bush another blank check. If he wants to invade Iran anytime soon, she certainly helped him in that regard again. But I think that both Obama and Edwards, not only because of their foreign policy, the things they've said about foreign policy and the war, but also their very strong domestic agendas. They can't carry off their domestic agendas until they get us out of Iraq. That's the bottom line on the money, for example.
I think the number one anti-war candidate is Ron Paul. Number two would be Kucinich, and the rest of them all love the war, and we will stay there occupying it for 50 more years. We will have bases there. We'll have 38,000 people in Iraq. If anyone other than Ron Paul or Kucinich is not, you know, is the person who wins, don't ever count on ever being out of Iraq. You will be there forever.
I
will be dead. I will die.
We got to get out of Iraq sometime.
No, but we will have people based there in the same sense that we have 38,000 people based in Korea. 50 years from now, easily, we'll have military bases. We'll have people, full-time employees of the United States government, getting paid to stay and live there and walk around with guns armed for the next 50 years, if anyone other than Kucinich or Ron Paul is elected, count on it. Yeah. Count on it. Especially Hillary. Hillary is not going to get you out of Iraq any more than Giuliani would. Those two are the same, except Hillary wants to tax you more.
Well, Paul, I didn't mention, because I put him in the category with Kucinich. He's a very strong anti-war candidate. I happen to agree with Kucinich on everything else that I don't agree with Ron Paul on, so I didn't mention him. I didn't mean to leave him out. But he, like Kucinich, is not going to be the nominee.
Don't count him out. That's the problem. That's the attitude that'll have it happen. Ron Paul raised $5 million in one day on the Internet. Ron Paul raised more than any other Republican in one day. Ron Paul is the man. You got to have some faith. Come on. The guy's the man. The guy's godlike. He walks on water.
You're listening to a moderately funny, level-headed Jewish Republican and a moronic extremist libertarian who hasn't read a book since 1973.
Yay! I think it's great.
Westchester's own Jay and Randy.
Bunch of idiots.
Oh, absolutely.
On WCHE, 1520 AM.
This is Kawasaki
of Kenneth
Square.
Oh, my favorite caller.
Hey, Kawasaki, how are you?
I'm not good, Randy. I'm not good.
Well, what's the matter?
Good.
because I don't have my $5.
Okay.
My $5.
You learned $5 too?
No, it's not two, Jay. It's not two, Jay. It's not
two,
Jay.
That's the problem with you white guys.
We weren't calling the police barely at all.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to 1520 AM. AM for another moron. And enjoy the show.
Yay!
How you say W-C-H-E?